Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. I'm your host, Robert, the redheaded stepchild of the Baker family. And with me, I have...
I'm Alex with a very important message. Do not stare directly into the black hole sun, unless you're an idiot.
Or the president. And...
I'm Morgan Allen. I'm the tallest member of this podcast for some reason.
Oh, yeah. How tall were you again? Like 5'8", 5'9"?
I'm 6.
Oh, shit. 6?
Yeah, I'm 6'1".
Fuck. Wait, does that technically mean I'm the shortest?
Well, you are the drummer, so yes.
Oh, shut up, Alex.
Why are there no tall drummers? Makes no sense.
Well, I once saw a tall-ass drummer once, but he was also kind of fat as shit. So I think there might have just been layers of fat building up his height. And I will never say who it was. But then again, some band no one gave a shit about, so who cares? But, yeah, episode 48. Two more until the big 5-0.
Oh, we're close. Oh, man, we were close.
Mm-hmm. Man, that's gonna be fun. So maybe figure out how to do something special. It's not just business as usual. You know, kind of like my birthdays. I don't really know how to celebrate my birthdays. I live a very sad life. But that's
going... Yes, we know.
But that's going on a tangent. So, have you guys been doing this past week?
Well, I've had a week filled with exhaustion, for one. I don't know why. I've had to come into work where they don't need me, but, you know, I'm scheduled in there, so, you know, I gotta be there for something other than just sitting on my ass for 6 hours. And I recently did a less than one day turnaround of my other show that I do for the website because scheduling conflicts. They're a pain in the ass.
My man, you finally understand short turnarounds.
Yeah. 3 hours after recording it, 12 hours before.
That's more fun than a barrel of laughs. Now, you know, I remember doing that with the last episode, just for shits and giggles, to see if I could. And I highly doubt I'm going to be able to do it this week, but, you know, shit happens. At least I'll still be able to get it out on the Wednesday. Boy. And how about you, Mark?
My car died.
Oh.
Just like today. Like today it happened. Like, all I'm going to do is just go to the store, get something to drink. It's like, it won't start. It won't do the thing. It's like, I got to do the thing to the fucking shop.
Probably the engine starter. That's happened to my car.
Did you ever have anyone to, like... Oh, wait. That doesn't have anything to do with the battery, does it? So you can't just, like, shock it back to... You know,
no,
starting...
I don't think I knew the battery.
The engine won't turn over, is that right?
Yeah, the engine won't turn over.
Yeah, it's probably the starter.
Damn.
I gotta take it now, and they're going around to work in the mornings. I gotta bump somebody off the rides.
I just have this image of my head of Mark, like, staring down really defeated with the text from Damn just printed over it.
Yep, that's about yep, that describes it.
Anyway, as for me, just the usual, trying to keep up with the musics and shit. Band practice. I didn't go to the movies this weekend. I had to table at an event at school, so that kind of, you know, cut into my schedule. Although I did finally have enough time to binge the rest of Twin Peaks to the point where I'm caught up with the current season. You know Hudson Mohawk appears in an episode of Twin Peaks?
Really?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just as a quick reference for these two, something that happens a lot in this season is that every episode ends with or at least features an appearance from some synth pop or indie rock act at this club called the Roadhouse. So, just to give you an example, yeah, there was Hudson Mohawk, there was two episodes that ended with Chromatics, including one where they do that song they did for Adult Swim, because I think... Johnny Jewel is one of the composers this season. I'm trying to remember. Episode 8, like 10 minutes in, there's a Nine Inch Nails performance. And I just like to think that all of Nine Inch Nails' music is secretly Twin Peaks fan fiction. Makes sense to me.
Yeah, I can see that.
Okay.
But yeah, this season, it's weird, man. Shit, I had to ask my buddy on Twitter to explain half this shit. I mean, it's visually cool, and of course the music is fantastic, but it's kind of a lot of, what the fuck is even the hell? And it's good to see David Bowie back in archive footage. May he rest in peace. Yeah.
That seems like Twin Peaks in a nutshell. Just a big case of, what is this? I don't even.
Yeah.
A case of, acid.
No, that's Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
Okay, cocaine.
Yeah. Actually, that's more Attack on Titan.
Which is also Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty jokes. Well, at the very least, it's glad to see that people realize that Jerry might not be the worst parent in that family, just saying. I mean, yeah, he's pathetic, sure, but, like, come on.
Yeah, Jerry's a pathetic piece of crap, but Beth is a self-righteous piece of crap.
I'm going to say, yes, Beth, you fucking dumbass! You fucking...
I have various hashtag strong opinions about this, but I won't get into that here.
Rick is the nucleus that keeps everything together. Without him in the center, everything falls apart.
If you say so, pal. Because I gotta be honest, I'm questioning even that. But I have my reasons. But like I said, we don't have time because we got quite a bit of stuff to cover. We got a dozen songs here and quite a few more news topics than usual. So let's jump right into the song discussion. As always, there will be a playlist down in the description if you want to follow along with us and listen to all this great music and understand where we're coming from with all this shit. And so to start, I'm actually going to throw it over to Alex.
Okay, so Mike Portnoy. He's on his 23rd, 24th project of the decade. I kid. But he's unveiled yet another supergroup. This time with his buddies Billy Sheehan on bass, Derek Shrunian on keyboards, Bumblefoot on guitar, and Jeff Scott Soto on vocals, called Sons of Apollo.
Wait, am I supposed to know who these people are?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, quickly, Derek Shrunian played keyboards in Dream Theater for a couple years. Billy Sheehan, Mr. Big, and the Winery Dogs with Mike Portnoy. Jeff Scott Soto, I believe, worked with Transatlantic for a while. And Bumblefoot was in Axl Rose's solo Guns N' Roses thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure you know who Mike Portnoy is.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Yes, of course. So they're coming out with a new album later on this year, October 20th, called Psychotic Symphony. It's an awesome title. And to kick off the promotional buzz, they've unveiled the first single off of that album, entitled, let me find it in here because I can't remember it. Yeah, Signs of the Time. Yeah, pretty simple title, all things considered.
Yep.
This is like a fusion of Falling into Infinity era Dream Theater with an extra dose of groove metal to it. There's a lot of low-tuned guitar chunks in there, some of Derek's trademark synth-wah sounds combining with some excellent bass work from Mr. Billy Sheehan and Mike Portnoy being Mike Portnoy. It's a time and a half, and I'm excited to hear just what else these guys have to offer.
You know, I was listening to this song, and you bring up those kinds of vibes, but when I was listening to it, listening specifically to the tone of those very low-end guitar riffs, I got kind of like a Gray Chapter Slipknot vibe to it, with some obvious touches of Symphony X. That's probably my bigger reference point for this, because...
Yeah, I heard a little bit of Symphony X in there, too.
Especially in that fucking solo part, which... And I know this is going to sound kind of weird, but there was something about it that carried just a slight tinge of Primus in there. Like, I don't know why. Like, this, it sort of, like, flicked off a switch in my head.
But, yeah, well, it reminds me a little bit of some of the solos that he recorded on Chinese Democracy, which, yes, I bought that album because, you know, people were still buying albums at the time.
Yes, yes. You're preaching to the choir, man. And I didn't even get my free Dr. Pepper, damn it!
Me either! But getting sidetracked here. Yeah, there's a lot of great instrumentation going on here, which is sort of a key element to all of Mike Portnoy's projects. He always tries to find the best people for whatever he's trying to go for, whether it's for straight-up rock, heavy metal, progressive metal, or whatever he's with Neil Morse.
Yeah, and there's some killer drum work on this thing, especially it seems like the song really lays the emphasis down on tom fills and grooves.
Well, that is a Mike Portnoy trademark.
And there's something about like how they're tuned that sounds very tribal, shall we say?
Yeah, I see where you're coming from with that. They're very low-tuned drums, very loose.
But yeah, solid enough track. I might be inclined to give this album a shot. And now for the next track, let's throw it over to Mark.
So it's got news from Ariel Pink, the dream pop artist, which I think you might have heard before. Maybe you heard on an Eric Andre show.
Oh yeah, I remember that gag.
We got for Ariel stink. Anyway, you got this. Anyway, you got an album coming up called "Dedicated to Bobby Jameson." I don't know what the fuck that is. And he got a new singer called Feels Like Heaven. And like, and listen to Chuck's like, this is definitely some 80s, like some 80s pop shit I'm hearing, right? Like you could tell, like, from the beginning, it starts like, it feels like this, you know, it feels this very 80s, like 80s style production, at least from this, I mean, you know, from the lo-fi sound. It feels like you're watching the end of a very 80s movie, like this guitar feel and like guitar centric type of sound I'm hearing from him, which is like, all right, I definitely do dig like some of this instrumentation going here.
Yeah, it's a very pleasant sound, that whole 80s like new wave shoegaze thing. In fact, this sounds like the kind of thing I would expect to hear at the end of like an episode of the current Twin Peaks run. But hey, we got three more episodes left. It could happen.
Even though like maybe I heard a little bit of Ariel Pink stuff before, not that much, but like I do see, you know, what he goes for, and I'm like, yeah, this is something I see him going for. This is definitely a cool song to check out.
It's the feel good hit of the summer.
And it's on the label Mexican Summer, which, okay. Like, no, really, that the label is called Mexican Summer.
Well, I guess, look, all the good names are already taken way back when, okay? You make do with what you can.
All right. Album is out on September 15th, in case y'all interested.
And now, let's move on to motherfucking clipping.
So there's a track for a radio show called This American Life, or titled We Are in the Future, which clipping the future is a art rap group, from Sub Pop, same as Shabazz Palaces, made a song called The Deep. This song is in fact five and a half minutes, and you can tell that there's a lot of switch up. There is a lot of beat switch up. Like, you get this slow building beat at the first minute, and then it increases more as it goes by, as we go by along. And it's like, okay, this is some electro future shit I'm hearing from this. Like, this is definitely like, it's okay. It's something you recognize from if y'all familiar with clipping and rapper David Diggs. Okay, this should sound like some epic shit I'm hearing from at least from Diggs himself. This is some crazy shit.
Yeah, man, those beat switch ups, like just going slower and then always like having these clear breaks, and like you hear these vocal samples that like punctuate each switch up, where it's like you're in a submarine that is it ascending or descending? I kind of trying to remember. But yeah, the beat, like it almost kind of starts off like this kind of Shabazz Palaces ish thing, but then as it goes faster and faster and the beat picks up more energy, it almost kind of goes into like some Lord Raja Clams Casino territory.
Yeah, I did get listened to a few times. Yeah, like Like, I know, like, I read the Stereo Gum article, President, like I said, like, Dick's, like, says he sounds like, do you feel like he sounds like a little bit like, you're like, his among the likes of Ka, Schoolboy Q, and Andre 3000. Like, do you feel, I mean, feel like you hear that in the vocals? Like, I kind of get, I get, like, a bit, like, I don't know,
I feel? Probably more the Ka comparison than anything else.
Man, maybe Ka, I get that, I can get that, but.
From a beat production, at least.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, but other than that, this shit sounds good.
Yeah, it's a good song. Right. And of course, we can't forget, you know, David Diggs. Like, I'm still not entirely sure what the lyrics are about, but they have the usual, like, very sharp, literate tone. And of course, his flow is always, he just rides the beat so eloquently. It's smooth, like really good whiskey.
Yep.
And now, let's move on from that to Proto Martyr. The Noise Rock Act have released the second single from their upcoming September 29th release, Relatives in Descent, a song called My Children. Now, while the previous single had kind of this steady, almost kind of like a gallop tone, especially with like the drum tom patterns, this one sort of starts off a little slow, and things are slightly more tuned. I mean, the bass has this very, like, menacing melodic progression, which is kind of amplified by the very, you know, off-kilter, atonal guitar lead melody. But then once it gets into a much faster, kind of a more punkish tempo, weirdly enough, the melodies start holding more consistently, and it's not as dissonant, although moments of that, you know, do peak in through and there. And, of course, the vocals are the usual rambly stream-of-conscious type of stuff that, I gotta be honest, I'm still not sure I can piece this shit together, but it sounds kind of cool, superficially at least.
Yeah, what's up with the spoken word stuff again? I still don't get it.
I guess that's supposed to reinforce the rambling noise aesthetic of it.
If all these things with the aesthetic, I should have known.
What do you have against aesthetic?
There's a time and a place for aesthetic, and it has to be the right one.
But the right one is every time.
If you say so, pal.
But, I mean, at least I understood the previous song somewhat because, you know, there was at least a lyric video, an actual music video. But, yeah, this one's still kind of a mystery to me. I mean, it sounds all right, I guess. Like I said, Proto Martyr is just a band that's okay to me. I can't say I'm heavily invested in them. But, you know, if this is, of course, your thing, then you should check it out.
Yeah, the interpretation's good on my end. It's just that spoken word stuff, I don't understand it. Not one bit.
But now, on to something that's maybe easier to understand. More metal! Now, this comes from an upcoming band called Low Estate, who have announced their debut album, The Covert Cult of Death, due out October 22nd. Now, I know this name since about 2015, because they were actually featured in the bonus tracks of that year's Adult Swim Singles program, and I might be remembering this incorrectly, but I remember their guitarist, Jeff Garlock, possibly tweeting out a link to that article. I'd have to search if he did, but I feel like that happened. So, yeah, that song I heard was pretty great, you know, pretty steady, stomping, heavy tones, plenty of thick, saturated guitars and feedback and just wailing walls of sound, especially in the vocals. So, of course, we have this new single, The Rope, which more or less, you know, if you've been following them, I guess, since before this happened, then you know what to expect here. It opens up with this really killer guitar/keyboard interplayed melody that kind of sounds like Dark Carnival shit. Hell, almost kind of like Yoshikage Kira's theme in Diamond is Unbreakable. And then it segues into this, you know, steady, hard, stomping beat with these kind of atmospheric tremolo guitar picks, these very thick, heavy bass lines. And of course, often when it gets into the choruses, they have this very dissonant chord progression amidst these absolutely swelling, airy wall of sound, just savage vocals. It's, again, from what I remember from this band when I last listened to them, this is still just, you know, on par and on point. And it sounds very similar to stuff you may have heard before like this, but it also sounds like it's got an energy that's completely unique to this band. And it has me hyped to check this out. This could be probably one of the best debuts of the year, from what it sounds like.
I'm not really all that into what they're doing. Now, this feels like a unique mix of post-hardcore, doom, and black metal, but doesn't really do anything for me.
Eh, fair enough. Although, you know, for me, sometimes I just need my pure, savage fix.
Yeah, I'll stick to Boris for that need of a fix.
And speaking of savage fixes, Converge! So, a couple weeks ago, we talked about them putting out a new, you know, 7-inch thing, which featured a new song, I Can Tell You About Pain, and we were still anticipating an album announcement. Well, now that album announcement is here, Converge's follow-up to 2012's All We Love We Leave Behind will be dropping on November 3rd, and it will be titled The Dusk in Us. And, of course, to commemorate this announcement, we have a new single from that album, Under Duress. Although, as a quick side note, yes, I Can Tell You About Pain will, of course, be on this album. Now, compared to that one, which was this very fast, kind of thrashy sort of thing with some slower grooves in there mixed somewhere, this one is more consistent, massive, kind of 6-8, or I guess 6-4, depending on how you choose to count it, kind of groove. Like, the guitars just sound absolutely massive as they just hulk and swing their fucking weight around. And, like, there's also these, you know, punctuations of, you know, the guitar chords punctuated by feedback, filling in, like, the empty dead space between each chord hit. And, of course, even when it gets to, like, the back half of the track, that atmosphere still holds. Like, when the guitar leads get, like, really atmospheric and into the higher end, that leaves room for the absolutely thick, heavy bass lines to just do their thing. And, of course, you know, heavy, savage lyrics that are screaming a bunch of shit about how you should be inherently distrustful of social, and I'm assuming political authorities as well. Good song. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, contrary to Low Estate, this song incites an emotion from me. Granted, it's an emotion of I want to punch some fucking Nazis, but still, that's more than what Low Estate gave me, and because this is the kind of hardcore sound I can get into. Streamlined and aggressive.
Just getting right to the fucking point. Yeah. But yeah. Oh man, it's fucking, I can't wait for November, man. It's gonna be a long wait, but it's gonna be a good way to kick off the month. But now let's get into the next couple of songs, because we have not one, but two offerings from the Adult Swim Singles program. Last week's and this week's, which actually dropped today, so Ray, we don't have quick. To awkwardly delay it. So, let's have Mark start off with this first one, which is quite a bit of a surprise. I don't think anyone was expecting this.
So, this is from last week, which is also the second track off of 15, off of the, you know, in the 15 song project, the missing Notebook Rhymes, which, is a new Doom track, but it's also a track from his old group back in the 90s called KMD.
Woo!
Yeah. Long story short, they were a thing. In fact, if his name was wasn't always Doom, it was Zev Love X.
Which still sounds like a comic book villain, but go on.
Yeah, and like unfortunately, you know, they did stuff because, well, you know. No, I think the album got delayed and all that shit. Plus, his brother, the DJ Subrock, well, he died in a car accident before the release of their album, which is kind of tragic. Which is, you know, it's tragic and shit. Yeah, but anyway, today Doom, along with another rapper, Jay Electronica, aka that dude still around.
Well, I don't know.
With a new song called True Light Years, and I can say this. And I can say this for this is definitely, yeah. This is like, okay, like maybe like I know mostly Doom from Soul Tracks, but not most of his KMD stuff. I do, well, maybe a little bit. Well, I did this a little bit of his KMD. Like, I have listened to most of the Doom instrumentals he's been doing most of the years. Yeah, I do say this sounds like this is definitely that style. I see. I mean, I do think. Doom would do back in the day, and I feel like, oh yeah, this is definitely his shit. Like, definitely from the production, which I do feel like is very, you know.
It sounds like a Peruvian pan flute band.
Yeah, yeah, Oh, yeah, yes, like a pet flute. I keep thinking, what the fuck is my thinking of a flute? Yeah, like that shit. And I think Jessica did the first verse.
Yep, sound like it.
Yeah, and like, okay, like, on Jay LaChonka, like, the one, like I said before, like, I heard one song with a dude, and I'm like, okay, like, his verse was good. I do think his verse, I did like Doom's verse as well. Doom does, you know, he does what he always does, like, go into his villainous, go into his alter ego as the supervillain, all that shit, and of course the flow is good, it was good, the beat is great, and this is also for a new album from KMD, which is the first one they did in 25 years. Holy shit.
Yeah, man, it's a good time for comebacks. And yeah, you know, good song. Both these guys had pretty good flow and some weird, you know, cool lyrics, whether they be cryptic or just plain silly in an awesome way, like using some hot pepper sauce on the mic. Yeah, there's food puns in this song. It's Doom.
Yeah.
This is the guy who made a song, an album called Food.
Food, yeah.
Yeah, so this is definitely, like, this is what people want to see. We want the hypest shit to come out of this compilation. So good to know Adult Swim's got Doom's back, as always.
Yep. And looking forward to another one this coming week when this show goes. Yeah, looking forward to more shit.
And now moving on to the other Adult Swim single that dropped today. This was actually a single from an upcoming album. We've actually talked about this band, I forget how many episodes ago, but the black metal act Wolves in the Throne Room. They've chosen the Adult Swim Singles program to premiere the second single from their upcoming September 22nd release, Thrice Woven. And this one is a song called Angerboda. I have no fucking clue if I'm even saying that right. Apparently, you know, it's fucking Norse mythology. Hell, I'm reading from Wikipedia right now. In Norse mythology, Angerboda, or the one who brings grief, is a female giantess. Or some shit. Apparently Loki's mom? Or the mother of Fenrir? I don't fucking know. I don't understand Norse mythology. Do I look like a scholar here to you? I'm not Gohan, you know. But yeah, this song, well, the first 4 minutes of it is certainly black metal, and so is the last couple minutes. I mean, there's some kind of cool-ish stuff in there at times, like, okay, so when it gets to, like, the actual halfway point, the drums sort of drop out and it just kind of leaves, like, these occasional tribal, like, drum hits, where the guitars just kind of keep going at the same pace they've been going, which kind of kills the momentum a bit. And then the instruments all drop out for kind of this really cool, dark, ambient, synthetic soundscape. Kind of sounds like a leftover from their last album, Celestite, which, as I may remind you, is the only Wolves in the Throne Room album I actually like. Yeah, go figure, the one that has the least amount of black metal on it. And then when it gets into the back half of the song, last 2 minutes, there is kind of this slow, kind of steady, stomping beat kind of thing there. But for the most part, this is just, you know, more black metal. It's like, whatever, I've been sitting here for like 8.5 minutes. I could have been eating a sandwich or something, but instead I was listening to this for some reason.
It's fucking black metal. You know how I feel about it.
Yeah, so that basically covers those singles. That's all we really have to say on this. Just go back and listen to the episode where we talked about the previous single. Our thoughts pretty much are no different here. And now moving on to non-Adult Swim stuff. Once again, throwing over to Mark.
The next artist is, that's all I'm talking about, is Jeremiah J. And since you never talked about him before, he's somebody that's associated with mostly, you know, Warp Records and Brain Feeder, you know, Fine Losses imprint. And I know I heard him before on a Lord Roger record or a song that he did with him, which I kind of liked. Anyway, he got this new track out of nowhere called Pain. Like the name Pain.
It's spelled like Max Payne.
Yeah, like Max Payne. Okay, so anyway on the song, I do say myself, like, I don't know much of Jeremiah J. Like, I listen to a little bit of his stuff, and I will say this, like, he does have that, you know, little experimental hip-hop thing going on, and I think the subject of the song he talk about is basically, like, I think why he named it Pain, because he said Pain is his grandmother's maiden name, and I think he's inspired by the meanings of the name. Is like, okay, that's sort of interesting to know about it. I will say, like, we'll get the production is like very weird and spacey. Will be weird and spacey as fuck. Does remind me a bit of, like, basically if you mixed in Lord Raja, Flying Lotus, maybe a little bit of Clams in there.
Hell, it almost kind of sounds a bit vaporwavey at spots, like really dark, nightmarish vaporwave.
Yep, pretty much. This is definitely a eccentric ass track for what I get about this, and that's all I got.
Yeah, first time listening to this guy, don't know a damn thing about him, but I gotta admit, I may not be all that understanding of the lyrics. It sounds pretty cryptic to me, but credit to Jay. I really love just the mood of his flow. He's got this really intimidating, creepy presence on an already creepy beat. So it's like, this shit is just completely unnerving in like the best possible usage of the term. I kind of want to check out more now. I'll have to put him in my backlog.
The never-ending backlog of stuff, yeah.
It truly is never ending with me. So now, moving on to the next track, Perturbator. As I mentioned, The Uncanny Valley, my second favorite album of 2016. Always good to hear from one of the motherfucking best in the synthwave game. And he's got another release plan for this year. This time it's actually an EP titled New Model, coming out October 20th. And so to promote it, he now released a single featuring a singer named Odzu titled Vanta Black. Well, okay, Vanta Black. It's a V, so it's not like Fanta Black, like they're grape soda or some shit. I'm getting off track here. But yeah, listening to this song, like, knowing Perturbator's work, like, it starts off more sparse and less saturated or busy than usual, which usually tends to be, like, the case with a lot of these, like, synthwave tracks that actually have a vocal component to them. They usually sort of back off it a little bit. In fact, it almost kind of, at times, almost sounds like those compositions you'd hear in, like the MIDI compositions from the Metroid Prime games, like, at least during the calmer parts. Like, it's very, like, dark, but it's very minimal. And then, like, once it gets a couple more minutes in, the bass synths start to get a little thumpier, shall we say. And, you know, the vocals are creating this really great, like, kind of film noir aesthetic to it, which, you know, is usually the case with synthwave and whatnot. And then once it gets, like, to the 3-minute mark, that's when it starts to become more typical Perturbator. Like, the vocals are technically still going a bit, but the instrumentation, like, the bass and the drums, like, they definitely start to get more of a, like, just pulsing vibe to them, and everything just, you know, kicks in, and the volume starts saturating to louder and louder electronic levels. It's, again, it's Perturbator, it's good stuff, and if you're not listening to him, why aren't you? Go listen to it. Pause this episode and go check out the song, damn it. But, moving on to the next track, doesn't Gucci Mane ever take a fucking break?
I guess not.
Jesus Christ. Like, okay, so he announced he's got a new album coming out September 15th called Mr. Davis, and I'm like, isn't that like the 6th or 7th project he's done, like, in the past 2 years?
You mean since he got out? I don't know, I lost count.
Like, Jesus, dude, don't you ever, like, I don't know, go to the beach, ball hard in Italy, take a fucking harp lesson, something?
Yeah, he's too busy collaborating with fucking Migos.
And I could say the same thing about Migos. Like, don't you guys, three guys, like, again, you could fucking, like, Are you slaves to your studio or something? Yeah. Like, do they fucking have, just... like, your families, like, locked up in a closet saying you have to record a specific amount of songs or else they won't let them go?
Yeah, they're just too busy collaborating with Gucci Mane. Is what we call a self-fulfilling prophecy.
But we'll say there's only two of them on the song, for those that give a shit, which I know you kind of don't. Offset's not on it, so yeah. It's just Quavo doing the course as always, and Takeoff doing some shit, and then Gucci got the last verse in there. It's like, it's like the usual shit. Like, I can make a chill. It's like, okay, got Gucci Mane, check. Beat made by Southside Metro Boomin, check. Migos in there, check.
Random ad libs, check.
Let's see, braggadocious rap, check.
Including the part where he just kind of randomly repeats cookies. Which kind of reminds me of that one Jason Derulo song where the singer was just like, repeat the word, neck. Like, come on, you can't just go around repeating random words. Words! I totally didn't steal that joke from Todd in the Shadows, I swear.
Bottle!
But yeah, this is just typical Migos and Gucci Mane shit. Hell, you can tell it even sounded like Gucci didn't want to be here. Why do you think he's only on the last verse? And there's nothing here except, like, there's some ad-libs about, like, Italian chicks, some random line about Jimmy Kimmel, and probably the funniest line of the song where Gucci says, "These niggas getting sick of me." And when you say that now... Do you mean, like, your homies in the rap game or the audience? Because I assure you, it's probably both. And we're sick of you too, but you just won't leave. Jesus Christ, man. But yeah, whatever. It's, again, you could have just spliced in any shit from any older episode where we mentioned Gucci and it wouldn't be any different. But now, let us move on to the last song of this fucking week. And, so, a few months back, we covered a Weezer track. They had released a new song that sounded suspiciously like 21 Pilots because reasons. And we were left hanging in the air about a possible album announcement. Well, fear no more, kids. Following up on 2016's The White Album, Weezer will be dropping Pacific Daydream on October 27th, which... Okay, I'm having flashbacks here, You guys remember the last time Weezer decided to release a couple albums year after year? That led to Ratitude, which, last I checked, most people consider that the worst thing you ever did. So, you sure you want to risk that again? Like, making an album that's as bad or as worse than Ratitude?
Ratitude?
Yeah. All you need to know, Mark, is there's a track on that album that's a collaboration with Lil Wayne.
That's
that
right.
That was a thing that happened.
Then again, I forget Weezer does collaborate with rappers most of the time. I said it's a big miss and his collaboration on this last album. So I'm kind of big. But
that was 2009. This is 2017. At a point where many Weezer fans believe they still have some dignity following Everything Will Be Alright in the End, and the White Album. So, they've released a new single and video for a song called Mexican Fender. And, well, I mean, it doesn't sound too bad. Hell, technically, I like it a hell of a lot better than Feels Like Summer. You know, the guitars are this very simplistic, but kind of anthemic, fist-pumping chord progression. The chorus is this very, you know, catchy, kind of sugary, sweet, triumphant sort of thing. And, of course, guess what the lyrics are about? It's about the narrator being in love and the situation being very fucking awkward. Because she apparently has a boyfriend already or some shit. Oh, by the way, if you're wondering about the title, as the narrator is explaining the story, like, the second line of the song, he says, like, I met this girl, something like he met a girl in a guitar shop, and his attention was distracted by the clerk trying to sell him a Mexican Fender. You know, because that's a thing to name a song, but Okay. And, you know, he's describing this girl as, like, the girl of his dreams. Like, especially how she's also a musician. Apparently she has, like, a job in computer programming. And apparently they once met at a show and she, like, asked some advice from him. And this was a whole summer fling or whatever. It's typical Weezer stuff. I mean, I like it. But again, considering we're getting this no less than a year after the White Album, I'm skeptical if this is indicative of the album's quality as a whole. That's all I'm saying.
This isn't really too much for me. If I want to hear a song like this kind of narrative, I'd just go listen to Canadian Softball or whatever Jared Longy is doing. You know, while he's not getting dissed by Jared Dines.
Hey, I will have you know, Jared dissed Jared back, and Longy was so much better at it.
Whatever you say, pal. But this song, yeah, I can't wait for the follow-ups like Japanese ESP, Chinese Gibson, and American Ibanez. But really, though, long gone are the days of the Blue Album and the Green Album and the Red Album. Yeah, Weezer, can you just stick to making your album self-titled with different colors? That usually works.
Well, I mean, they already did that with White Album. I don't think they can do it twice in a row.
Just the Red Album.
Well, do we want another Ratitude or Hurley? I don't think so.
Eh, even if this album is bad, you know, to be fair, I haven't actually heard Ratitude or Hurley in full. Or the Green Album. Or Make Believe. Or Pinkerton. Hell, in fact, my first hand...
How many albums does this fucking band have?
Let's see. Blue Album, Pinkerton, Green Album, Maladroit, Make Believe, Red Album, Ratitude, Hurley, Everything Will Be Alright in the End, White Album. That's 10 albums total.
Jesus. Criminy.
What's next? The Yellow Album?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, remember when it was rumored that this album was going to be called The Black Album?
Except Jay-Z got to get first.
Actually, Metallica got there first.
Okay, that too.
Eh, I don't make the rules, man. But, yeah, I suppose that basically covers all the song discussion for this week. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we got news topics to discuss. So see you in a bit. And we're back. So let's get through these news topics, starting right from the top. You know, a while back we had Mastodon finally returning with their newest album, Emperor of Sand, which I thought was pretty good. Still nowhere near the heights of quintessential Mastodon, but like it was still better than Once More Around the Sun. Whatever. But apparently, we may be getting another Mastodon release sometime soon. According to an Instagram post by guitarist Brent Hines, apparently Mastodon have an album called Cold Dark Place that is set to drop sometime soon. The date, at least for the moment, is suspected to be September 22nd, according to a Amazon listing that was apparently pulled. Of course, because you obviously don't want this news being super extra 100% confirmed for sure. But, yeah, the artwork was actually posted by Brett Hines on his Instagram page, so we know this is a thing. Apparently, this was actually a solo album that he was working on. Apparently, I think sometime around the recording of Once More Around the Sun. But apparently, if this is set to be released as a solo Mastodon album, I don't know if they reworked and re-recorded the tracks as Mastodon efforts, or if this is still just pure unfiltered Brent and his good dogs.
Either way, it should be pretty hype.
I'll take anything at this point. Like, I'm curious as to how it'll stack up to, you know, Emperor of Sand, if it'll be any similar, completely different. Maybe it'll be heavier. Who even knows? But we'll just have to wait and see. You know, if it actually comes out on September 22nd, who even knows at this point? They might just surprise drop it for free somewhere. And now, moving on to our second story. So, in MTV's plan to, you know, try to regain the glory days, they have now announced that in addition to bringing back TRL, they are also bringing back one of their classic franchises, MTV Unplugged. It will be premiering September 8th. And, you know, Unplugged was one of those pretty interesting things, you know, hearing stripped down acoustic performances from some of the most iconic artists in the game. Hell, for some bands and acts, it was argued that their MTV Unplugged performances and the recordings that were released sometimes represented some of the best material they ever did, especially if we're thinking bands like Nirvana or Alice in Chains.
Mm-hmm.
It was canceled in around 2008, 2009, I believe. And, you know, it's been gone for a while, but there is, you know, a precedent to believe that this revival could work. I mean, I believe it's either Pitchfork or Stereogum that has those Tiny Desks concerts, which kind of function on the same general principle. So if, you know, they find the right talent to perform acoustic versions, this could be a pretty interesting thing. Guess who's starting things off, though?
May I?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
You know, the funny thing, that was actually less ear-grating than the original Shawn Mendes version.
So yes, you get the memo, is Shawn Mendes, the guy that did the whole
yeah.
Treat You Better song, aka
the guy who turned one of his other singles pretty much verbatim into a different single, which is just fucking terrible.
Yeah, so of all the ways to bring back one of your most classic, iconic, and important properties, and you kick it off with this shit? I mean, God, most of his music is already basically just white boy with acoustic guitar shtick. Pretty so what would much. Be the functional difference here?
Yeah, you're pretty much just, well, you're not doing much of a change of it, just doing the basic.
But now so many teenage girls watching MTV because it's all they watch, we'll see. Firsthand, just how much of a nice guy he really is, and I want his fucking head on a platter.
See, served up with some Szechuan sauce.
But ladies, I can treat you better. Please let me fuck you. Please?
No, really, I'm a nice guy, I swear. It's just all these damn bitches that won't hop on my knob.
Yeah.
You get on my dick and run like a... Please, fuck it.
Yeah, we could basically go with this all fucking night, but, I mean, maybe the lineup for future episodes will be better. I mean, who knows? Maybe the next performance will be Ed Sheeran.
Oh.
I don't have many ideas.
Let's be honest, you knew that was already happening anyway. But, moving on from infuriating stories to a couple... Well, a few, actually, more humorous ones. So, what are... Just to ask here on the record, what are our opinions on pineapple?
They're good on pizza. Yes, they are. Enzymes. Enzymes.
Yeah. Nigga, fuck yo science shit. Pineapple is shit, and it definitely does not go on pizza. People who put pineapple on pizza are on the lower rungs of the evolutionary ladder.
It blends with ham because of the enzymes that come from its juices. This is science at its most scientific.
Well, who the fuck puts ham on pizza anyway? Like, unless you're making, like, a Cubano sandwich pizza, you don't do that shit. But... At least there's one other person who's on my side here. The organizers of the Reading and Leeds Festival. According to The Telegraph and Stereogum, apparently on the list of banned items for this year, alongside weapons, drones, and fireworks, pineapple will not be allowed at the festival. Now, the reason for this is kind of strange. One of the bands listed on the festival billing is a group called Glass Animals, who have a song called Pork Soda... presumably no relation to the album, which features the following line, pineapples in my head. And apparently this has become like an in-joke amongst the fan base where whenever they sing this, people in the audience like to wave pineapples or dress up like pineapples. Okay. I've heard of weirder band traditions. But, yeah, this is a thing they want to do, apparently. So, I mean, I'll admit that's got to be hell to clean up after each show. Like, I mean, come on. Like, do these guys... Do the people who take the pineapples to these shows actually take the pineapple back with them? I'm kind of curious here. Or are they just, like, throwing on stage or some shit, and then, like, some poor fucking janitor guy's got to clean it up afterwards. Like, man, like, it's a good thing I decided to invest all my money in internet stocks.
Here's a pineapple, you dick! Ow, you fuck! That was spiky! Why you doing pineapples, damn it! Who the fuck throws fruit in a fucking... Oh, wait. You know, fucking... Man, my... Either they're tomatoes. That's worse. Or,
But, you know, this actually gives me an idea. I'm going to write a song that's all about roast pork, then sing it at shows, and then everyone will bring me roast pork, and I will never be hungry. Hey, it could work.
It only works for Gabriel Iglesias and chocolate cake. It doesn't work for everything.
Fun fact, I actually did once bring Gabriel Iglesias a chocolate cake at a show.
Of course.
Okay. All right. This
homemade chocolate cake, too. So you know it was special. But yeah, to any Glass Animals fans listening that are also going to Glastonbury, guess you'll just have to buy some pineapple costumes or some shit. I don't fucking know.
Or do some fake ones. I don't know, like... Like, make some paper mache bullshit or something like that.
Okay, fair enough. Now, moving on to another story that's just plain ridiculous. Touring is a pain in the ass. There's so many things you gotta, you know, keep track of. From, you know, merch guys, venues, best routes between each. And, of course, your bandmates as well. Their needs and even where their locations are. Because, you know, it would be really terrible if you were to, like, you know, be out on tour, you get from one location to the next, and then you realize you left a member somewhere in some other part of the state, because it might be a struggle to actually get them to the show they're supposed to be playing that night. So anyway, Belle and Sebastian left their drummer behind at a Walmart.
So, yeah. Wait. I thought bass players were the ones that get left behind by their parents. I mean, their bandmates.
Hey, remember, drummers can't count to four, so...
Why you let me at Walmart? I'm down here. Oh, wait, no, it's Doritos. Fucking never mind.
So, yeah, Belle Sebastian, they're currently in the middle of a tour. They were heading off to a show in St. Paul, Minnesota. And at some point, they realized that they left behind their drummer, Richard Colburn, at a Walmart in North Dakota. So their singer, Stuart Murdoch, even tweeted, quote, "Shit, we left Richard in North Dakota. Anyone want to be a hero and get him to St. Paul somehow? The gig hangs in the balance." Blushing sad face emoji. Thankfully, a bunch of people were able to pull together some sources, you know, get him a ride to an airport, and then get him to have flown into the area. Even saying, tweeting, quote, "Thanks for your help, folks. We have Richard on the plane now, so everything is okay. He's in his pajamas, sitting with a mimosa." Wink emoji, mimosa emoji. Now, you want to know the best part about this story? The funniest part about this story? Guess which city in North Dakota they left him behind in. Go ahead, take a guess.
Oh, shit.
Fargo. They left him behind in fucking Fargo, North Dakota. Oh my god, this is amazing. And I saw another headline. I think it might have been a Consequence of Sound who reported this. And the byline was like, "Someone get Macaulay Culkin and the Coen brothers. I have an idea." I mean, god, this sounds like the kind of shit that would be like in a fucking side story in an episode of the Fargo TV show. Holy shit. I couldn't make this up if I tried. This is amazing.
Meanwhile, FX.
Thank you, universe. You know how to make a guy happy and to give me a freebie. Who knows? Yeah. This might actually be in the upcoming season. They are making another season, right? I'm not sure.
I think they are. I think they might take some time filming. Like, I think, like, most of these FX shows, they sometimes either they air one season, take a year off, then do that shit. I mean, hell, they do the Louis, they do the Atlanta, and I guess they do it here too.
But yeah, oh man, that was too funny, man. Some nice
sauce.
From the
what speaking of sauce.
Yeah, that's from the What the Fuck Is Wrong With You files, if there ever was one. And yeah, speaking of sauce, so as we mentioned about a month ago, the McDonald's Twitter account had a little giveaway on the on the internet for four bottles of the Szechuan. Well, okay, three bottles of the Szechuan sauce. Remember, one of those bottles already went to fucking Justin Roiland. And so those three bottles were eventually given out to various people. I don't know who the other two went to, but one of them fell right into the hands of a Robert Workman, who's apparently a writer for a website called WWG, an offshoot of comicbook.com, specifically focused on gaming. So he decided to auction off the bottle of the sauce on eBay, you know, with 20% of the proceeds going to the charities Extra Life and Able Gamers. So, you know, good thing to do with the sauce. Apparently, the highest bidder on this auction actually had to ditch out on the commitment. So the bottle went to the second highest bidder, a Mr. Joel Zimmerman, or as you might better know him by his musical stage name, Dead Mouse.
Dead Mouse 5, say it right.
Right, sorry, Dead Mouse 5. Yes, Deadmau5 apparently had $15,000 to burn on a bottle of sauce that we're probably not going to see until at least next year, if even that. And he was not subtle about it. He was bragging on fucking Twitter and shit.
Yeah.
Like it was a fucking honeymoon or some hell.
This great Szechuan sauce conspiracy only grows bigger every single day.
Who's going to get it next?
I don't know, man. Remember, there's very much the chance that even Post Malone has probably already tasted the sauce.
Which probably means Jared Dines have tasted the sauce.
Which probably means Jared Alonge might break into Justin Roiland's house and steal the sauce.
I mean, who's next? Logic? It might be him.
It might be Logic.
He didn't be on the show last week.
Shit. Fuck, you're right.
Just how deep will this conspiracy go?
How many of their famous friends will taste the sauce? Because, okay, we already know Ethan Klein has tasted it. We know that Alex Hirsch, the creator of Gravity Falls, has tasted the sauce. Who knows? Maybe even Werner Herzog and Stephen Colbert might have tasted the sauce. Joel McHale probably tasted the sauce.
Or Gillian Jacobs, who also appeared last week as well.
Yeah. Fucking people sauce everywhere. Sauce for days. Meanwhile, we're still fucking waiting for McDonald's to actually do the right thing here. God fucking damn it. But This is going off on a tangent. We got one more story to cover here, and this might take a bit, but we're going to try to get through it as quickly as possible. So, Loudwire.com, one of the most popular internet websites for all things heavy metal and hard rock related, are hosting the inaugural Loudwire Music Awards at the Novo in downtown Los Angeles on October 24th. And now the voting for all the various awards is now open to the public. Also, it's worth noting that the event, I believe, will be hosted by... Oh, man. Fucking seriously?
Yep, Chris Jericho.
Why?
Because he's a metal guy, and he's really big with Loudwire. If not him, it will be Corey Taylor. Because we know we have to have his opinion on everything on Loudwire.
Yeah, but why couldn't we have Corey Taylor? Why do we have to have a singer from a mediocre hard rock band? As far as I'm concerned, he's that first, and a... apparently only sort of okay-ish wrestler second.
How dare you?
Wait, you actually like him as a wrestler? I've never heard good things about Chris Jericho.
Where have you been hearing this from?
People whining on the internet every 5 minutes about this or that thing in wrestling. after a while, it all just kind of blurs together in opacity.
You're clearly not focusing on the right person, but whatever. This is the discussion for another time.
Also worth noting, the ceremony will feature performances from Body Count, Hailstorm, Starset, Power Trip, also Rob Halford, Anthrax, and even Nothing More, with apparently more to be announced. So now, let's get into the actual nominees and shit. Sorry for the top. Hard Rock Artist of the Year. The nominees are, In This Moment, Korn, Papa Roach, Pretty Reckless, Starset, and Stone Sour.
Why do people like the Pretty Reckless? They write the same fucking song every single song.
Thankfully, I've skipped down on them for a while, so I still don't know what they sound like.
They're a poor man's Hailstorm. That's what they sound like.
Jeez, and I thought Hailstorm was a poor man's Hailstorm. But as far as this, I voted for Stone Sour, basically because they're technically the best of the options available. What about you, Alex?
I would go with Stone Sour as well.
Oh, what, you didn't actually vote in the thing?
Not yet.
Damn, I actually took time to do that before we did this. But anyway, Metal Artist of the Year. The nominees are Avenged Sevenfold, Body Count, Fucking Code Orange, Mastodon, Metallica, and Power Trip. So, which of these would you go with, if I even need to ask?
Lol, Metallica wins.
I mean, clearly they're probably going to. Personally speaking, my vote would be between Mastodon and Power Trip. I think I may have voted Mastodon in this, but, you know, if Power Trip were somehow to pull it out and win, that would actually be quite surprising. You know, one of the bigger up-and-coming thrash bands. And Nightmare Logic was a fucking incredible album, so. Anyway, moving on to Hard Rock Album of the Year. The nominees are At the Drive-In with Inter Alia, Highly Suspect, The Boy Who Died Wolf, Papa Roach with Crooked Teeth, Royal Thunder with Wick, Starset with Vessels, and Stone Sour with Hydrograd. For this, I voted for Inter Alia. It was the only one of these that I actually listened to, so technically it gets the vote by default.
I'm thinking Stone Sour's going to win because, you know, this is a fan vote.
That is true. And now for Metal Album of the Year, presented by Razor and Tie, the label. We have Avenged Sevenfold, The Stage, Body Count's Bloodlust, Code Orange's Forever, Mastodon's Emperor of Sand, Metallica's Hardwired to Self-Destruct, and Power Trip's Nightmare Logic. Wait, aren't these just the same nominees for Metal Artist of the Year?
Exactly, they are.
Damn.
Loudwire, you're being lazy. We don't like that.
Yeah, I mean, I give credit where credit is due for nominating Power Trip, since they're obviously not on the big playing field as Metallica or Mastodon, and to be honest, Nightmare Logic was the album I picked here. It is the, if you're looking for some really savage 80s throwback thrash with that really just, you know, kind of undergroundish tinge to it, Nightmare Logic is your fucking album, and it fucking puts hair on your chest. But we know it's going to go to Metallica anyway.
Of course it is.
Pretty much. Now for Hard Rock Song of the Year and Metal Song of the Year. Now, the nominees for these ones were kind of weird. Like, basically how they have it set up is that you can stream the songs through Apple Music, and whichever song gets the most streams by the end of the voting time basically wins.
That's weird.
Wait, so basically, or the one you gotta be listened to the most?
And, okay, so it measures at least if you listen to 30 seconds, which is useful for people like me who don't have Apple Music, so we just, like, stream the previews that they have listed on their site. But let's actually get into the song. So, the nominees are Foo Fighters with Run, Judas by fucking Fozzy, Alone by I Prevail, Go to War by Nothing More, Of Mice and Men with Unbreakable, and Monster by Starset. I wanted to go to Foo Fighters just because it's the only good song out of all of these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is one that we really can't, you know, vote individually for. It's all dependent on whatever gets listened to the most, which, yeah, that's a weird way to tally it up, but whatever.
I mean, obviously, I think more people are probably going to be listening to the Foo Fighters one just because it's Foo Fighters. And again, it's the only decent song here. Everything else is just kind of meh to bleh to Fozzie. I did not care.
Whatever.
Oh, don't tell me I actually like that band, dude.
I have one of their albums, their best album, Autographed, so yeah.
Look at this autograph. Every time I look, it makes me laugh. Sorry, I had to. But yeah, obviously I'm pulling from my Fighters of Foo. And now we move on to Metal Song of the Year. Which are mostly actually pretty good, save for one. Okay, so we have Body Count with No Lives Matter. Fucking Dragon Force with Ashes of the Dawn. Municipal Waste with Amateur Sketch. Obituary with Sentence Day. Paul Bearer with I Saw the End. And Power Trip with Executioner's Tax, parentheses, Swing of the Axe. And like I said, with the exception of the Dragon Force song, these are all pretty good nominees for songs. It's actually kind of hard to pick between all these, but ultimately I went with Power Trip. It fills the void that most thrash bands don't fulfill for me nowadays.
Yeah, part of me wants to see Paul Bearer win because the album was fucking awesome.
Yeah, I understand that, you know, seeing these up-and-coming underdogs. Like, I think between us, we're probably going to be rooting more for Paul Bearer and Power Trip than maybe the others. Although, you know, I wouldn't be upset if Body Count took it home. No Lives Matter was a pretty killer tune.
Yes, it was.
Just so long as it doesn't go to fucking Dragon Force in there. Oh, look at me, we can play the notes really fucking fast to the point where you have to blister your fingers. It's all technique, no musicality. We're basically just Yngwie Malmsteen.
But isn't that what Rings of Saturn is?
Oh, dude, fuck. You know what? I apologize to Dragon Force knowing that Rings of Saturn exist. God damn.
Thank you.
Still doesn't make me like Dragon Force, by the way. Anyway, now we have Best Live Band. And this one is actually really tough because I've seen four of these acts live. And they're all really good ones. I don't know about how the other two are live, but we can assume there's probably some pretty good stuff there. So the nominees for Best Live Band are Amon Amarth, Anthrax, Behemoth, The Dillinger Escape Plan, Frank Carter and the Rattlesnakes, and Iron Maiden. And I kind of want to ask you first, Alex, did you, or what would you vote for in this scenario?
Given the choices, I would have to say Dillinger.
Yeah, it's like, again, I've seen Anthrax, Behemoth, Dillinger, and Maiden all live. They all are really good in their own way, so it's really hard to pick just one, but yeah, my gut right now says Dillinger, although part of me suspects it may go to Iron Maiden, which I wouldn't be upset about. They do pretty killer live shows. I suspect maybe more folks might be won over by the elaborateness of a Maiden show more than anything else. Just a theory. And now for most dedicated fans. And the nominees are Baby Metal, Blink 182. Get the fuck out of here. This is,
what are you doing here?
The fucking, they're not even close to metal. Like, okay, if Blink 182 is metal, then Green Day is fucking Cannibal Corpse. But the other nominees, Hailstorm, I Prevail, Iron Maiden, and Rammstein. Now, shit, this might actually be a tough one. I want to say Maiden. Again, the legacy, I figure the legacy act here is probably going to take it, but dude, Rammstein and Baby Metal fans are fucking nuts.
Yeah. I would side with Baby Metal, but let's just all be glad Blackfield Brides are nowhere to be found here.
Or Sleeping with Sirens, thank God.
Yeah. Fucking pretentious little makeup running assholes.
And now moving on to Breakthrough Band. The nominees are Avatar, Beartooth.
Wait. Beartooth, a Breakthrough? They've been around for years.
Yeah, and it's not like Avatar where you can make the argument that they were languishing in obscurity before breaking through to the mainstream metal crowd. Beartooth has pretty much always been a mainstream metal, at least mainstream in the modern day context, band, so.
Fucking shit again.
Anyway, the other nominees are Blood Clot, Frank Carter and the Rattlesnakes, King Woman, and Royal Thunder. Now, I kind of suspect maybe it'll go to Avatar. I mean, they took home, like, you know, breakthrough, a similar award at the fucking Revolver Music Awards, so, the hype could maybe still ride through here.
I have no dog in this fight, so let's just move on.
Right. Best New Artist, the nominees are Black Map, Cover Your Tracks, Dead, Gone Is Gone, which, I gotta ask, isn't that one of those supergroups that I think the, one of the dudes from Mastodon is in? Greta Van Fleet, and Zeeland Ardor, who, now that I think about it, is actually on the Adult Swim Singles program this year. Still haven't gotten around to them. Yeah, no comment here.
Again, no dog in this fight.
And now, moving on to Best Vocalist, which, Alex, you want to take over for this one?
Sure, I'll take over this one. I'll go down to up instead, because it'll feel better that way. We have, of course, Corey Taylor from Stone Sour, MLNY Parsons of Royal Thunder, or Melanie Parsons, I guess, because poor literacy is cool. Miles Kennedy of Alter Bridge, Bruce Dickinson of Iron Maiden, Maria Brink of In This Moment, and Chester Bennington of Linkin Park. Okay, there's a time and place for posthumous credit. This is neither the time nor the place.
Yeah, it's like, if you're going to give him a posthumous credit, don't leave it up to... I mean, you could make the argument that because the death of Chester Bennington is still kind of fresh in everyone's mind, that most of the votes are going to go his way. But, like, again, if that's kind of a certainty, just give him the posthumous honor already.
Yeah.
Instead of leaving it up to chance where he could possibly get outvoted by Bruce or Corey.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to be the one to cover Best Guitarist?
Sure. For this, we have my boy, Tosin Abasi of Animals as Leaders, Sinister Gates, and Zachy Vengeance of Avenged Sevenfold, two of the laziest guitarists ever.
I vote for neither of them. I prefer voting for Guitar Guy.
Yes. Brent Hines and Bill Kelleher of Mastodon. Dave Mustaine and Megadeth lead guitarist number 12, Kiko Luero of Megadeth, Mark Tremonti of Alter Bridge, and Zach Wilde of Ozzy Osbourne and Zach Sabbath.
The fuck is Zach Sabbath? What happened to Black Zach Label Wilde's Society?
Black Sabbath tribute band.
What happened to Black Label Society? What is this shit?
I have no idea. I have no idea, but my vote will go to Tosin Abasi, even though I know he won't win, because people cannot comprehend intricate 8-string djent guitar mastery.
I gotta admit, here I'm stuck between Tosin and the Mastodon dudes. Because, like, again, you make the argument, the very valid argument, that Tosin Abasi, with his magical fingers, knows how to work wizardry on every kind of string quantity known to man. And, you know, he's a pretty solid songwriter as well. But you couldn't make the argument that Brent Hines and Bill Kelleher have a chemistry to them that is just second to none, mm-hmm. and are also really good at actually, you know, incorporating guitar parts into songs. Because it's not just how technical you play, it's how you apply it in the context of a song. Because when you're just all wizardry with no musicality, no songwriting technique, you're basically just Yngwie Malmsteen. And for the last two words here, I will take care of these. Best Drummer. So this is where my area of expertise comes into play. Charlie Benante of Anthrax, Brand Daler of Mastodon, Mario Duplantier of Gojira, Thomas Hawk from Meshuga, Matt Greiner of August Burns Red, and the only one of these nominees that sucks, Vinnie Paul from Hell Yeah.
Where's Mike Portnoy?
Yeah, put him in place of Vinnie Paul. What do you like Vinnie Paul anyway? Even back when Pantera was great, he was the least great part about it. But yeah, voting for one of these is kind of tough. When I actually did the voting, my gut instinct went for Thomas Hake. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if any of these were to take it. Like, I imagine maybe Brand Daler has a higher chance than most because, you know, Brand Daler, but I wouldn't be mad if any of these guys took it home. Well, okay, I'd be mad if Vinny won, but, you know, other than him.
Yeah, I'm a bit torn between Brand Daler and Charlie Benante myself, so I'll have to sleep on that one.
And now the last award, the Best Useless Cunt Award. And that is to say, Best Bassist. The nominees are Frank Bello from Anthrax, Derek Boyer of Suffocation, Rex Brown from Rex Brown, Matt Freeman from Rancid. Wait, Rancid is still a thing? Holy shit. Mike Kerr of Royal Blood. And the award goes to Steve Harris of Iron Maiden. Don't give me that look. You know that's going to be the case.
It's only because John Myung is nowhere to be found.
Oh, please. Even if John Myung was on this thing, you know how many of the nostalgia heads are going to fucking vote on this thing and say Steve Harris?
Yeah.
It's just the way life is. But yeah, those are all the nominees. And, you know, I'm kind of curious as to how this inaugural edition of the awards show will play out. Secretly, though, I'm kind of hoping to find a different host other than fucking Jericho.
Do you want it to be Dave Mustaine like last time?
Can it be Jose Mangin instead? You know, I kind of miss him now, to be honest. I am so very sorry for all those jokes I made about you in that episode of the podcast, sir.
Well, either way, we know it'll be a big step up from the Revolver Music Awards because the bar is at the absolute bottom. My God, that was a terrible show.
Well, as long as this one doesn't go for 3+ hours. But yeah, that covers all the news topics. And now, it's the moment that all of you have been waiting for, that we've been building up to for a while. Ladies and gentlemen, it is the new album releases for August 25th. Mega Blowout Bonanza.
This long-ass list.
Everything's coming out this week.
And this is just the short version. There's probably other stuff in there that other people care about that I missed. But starting from the top, we have the newest album from grindcore act Langche, titled Razor Grind, the return of math rockers Terramellos with Trash Generator, shoegazing black metaler Sandheads with their newest album So Numb, ASAP Mob dropping their new tape Cozy Tapes Volume 2 to Cozy. Okay, you motherfuckers did that on purpose, didn't you?
Well, what did you expect? It was going to be either that or Electric Boogaloo.
And speaking of hip-hop, we have another new release from Brockhampton with Saturation 2.
Already.
Already. Paris with All We Know of Heaven, All We Need of Hell. Iron and Wine with their new album Beast Epic. The band OCs, formerly known as The OCs, with their new album Orc. Gogol Bordello with their newest release Seekers and Finders. Action Bronson dropping his newest album, Blue Chip 7000. And we have not one, but two releases from XXL Freshmen from this year. We have Maiden TYO dropping a new EP called True's World. And we have 17, the debut album from XXX, State of the Union, starring Ice Cube. Ah, man, I knew I'd get to use that joke eventually. We have a new album from EMA with Exile in the Outer Ring. We have Fifth Harmony with a new release, self-titled.
What the fuck is a Fifth Harmony? You just made that up.
Sure, I did. Don't tell him. I don't want him to lose his sanity. But moving on, we of course finally have Kitty dropping her newest, her debut full-length album, Miami Garden Club. We have Dutch prog metalers Leprous with Melina. We have the return of Metalocalypse maestro Brendan Small with Galacticon 2, Become the Storm.
Finally!
And last, but certainly not least, the grand return of Queens of the Stone Age with their new full-length album, Villains. And scene. Jesus Christ, that's a lot of shit.
How many was that? 18?
Fuck, I wasn't even counting. Dear God, can you imagine the fucking thing I'm going to have to do to edit this albums. Into the video? It's going to be fucking crazy. Shit. But yeah, that'll about do it for this week. So now just got to clean house and get the hell out of here. So Alex, where can they find you on the internets?
The same place as always. Aura of Azure on Twitter and Instagram and BBS and Reel to Reel and Telegram. And now, In Your Mind.
Huh. No wonder that dream I had last night was really weird.
Okay.
Mark, what about you?
Okay, as usual, on Twitter via Mac2HotMania. And of course, on my own site, The Mind, which I hope Alex doesn't evade. Well, I don't know. The Mind, the Hybrid One at thehybrid1.wordpress.com. Yeah, latest shit I did, reviewed Netflix, the Marvels, the Defenders. Short answer, it's pretty good. It makes Iron Fist suck less, even though his show still suck. And they use From the Jewels. They use them actually right this time. Iron Fist.
I still haven't seen any of those shows. But yeah, hopefully
we'll skip Iron Fist. It's not worth it.
I will. And hopefully your mind isn't too influenced by Alex. Hopefully it won't become a tribrid one. See what I did there? I thought it was funny. Anyway, as for me, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Rob Barracuda. If you want to email me, email robert@surrealresolution.com for all your questions, comments, concerns, opportunities, and memes. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Google Play and iTunes. New audio-only episodes go up every Wednesday. Video goes up every Friday or Saturday or so on my YouTube channel. Just search Rob Barracuda or Decibel Boost. And of course, this is the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. Follow on Twitter at Surreal Rezo. Find online www.surrealresolution.com. Like us on Facebook. And of course, you know, be sure to listen to all the prior episodes of the podcast if you ever feel so inclined. Of course, check out the rest of our great podcasts as well. If you like gaming, check out The Training Stage. If you like movies, check out Salty Flicks. And if you like anime, check out Podcast ONA. Lots of podcasting material for your ears. Be sure to check out a lot of our great written content. I'm probably going to have a buttload of reviews to at least three I plan to do next week. And hopefully this week I can get a review of the new Sandheads album out. It's already streaming online, so, you know, I've had a chance to listen to it. It's pretty damn good. That's the short version. You know, be sure to check out all of our great ring content outside of that as well. You know, your anime shit as well. We're finally getting caught up with some My Hero Academia shit, so read that. It's good. And, of course, be sure to jump into our Discord chat if you want to ever dank it up with us. And, of course, shout out to the producer, Mr. E, for graciously letting me use his music for this podcast. Well, that'll about do it for this week. So, until next time. Holy shit, is that a motherfucking JoJo reference?